This podcast is intended for investment professionals only. Hello and welcome to LGIM Talks. For many of us, the daily commutes and regular chats around the water cooler are a thing of the past. But is the office sector facing the same structural decline as the high street? Or is a return to office life just around the corner? With me to talk about the future of office space in a post-COVID world is Bill Page, Head of Real Estate Market Research, and James Spencer-Jones, Head of Real Estate Debt. Welcome to you both. Now, Bill, turning to you first, are you as pessimistic as many of your peers that the office as we know it will become a thing of the past?
Thanks, Francis. I think it's probably worth starting with an opening statement to say that we do expect downside structural risk to office demand with an impact to rental growth. Having said that, I don't think we are as pessimistic as many in the market, and we prefer to take a more nuanced view about how things will pan out over the next 5 years. The reason we come up with this view is we start with the downside. So we start by looking at current survey evidence, and then we work back from that to form what we hope is a considered view for medium-term demand. So if you look at the current survey evidence, and there's been plenty of surveys since the pandemic started, most employees are suggesting that post-pandemic, they'll prefer to work from home 2 to 3 days a week. And most employers are clearly thinking about cutting space and enabling this more flexible working. However, although that's quite a significant change from previous, there are nuances around that, and there's differences in opinion that we need to consider. So, you know, for everyone who thinks working from home has been an excellent change to their working life and indeed lifestyle, there are many people who miss the structure of office life, miss the commute. Also, we are seeing the productivity and collaboration benefits of office life becoming more missed and more enhanced the longer this lasts. So without rehashing all those arguments, I prefer to take a step back and say it's not binary. There are different opinions that mitigate and offset one another. And the end result in a five-year forecasting horizon, which is our remit here, is likely to be much less severe than the current worst-case scenarios.
And what about the actual demand math then, Bill?
Yes, so in terms of deriving a forecast, we look at three things, and ultimately office demand is the intersection of three things. Firstly, it's jobs growth, so the number of office-style jobs in the economy. Then the density with which we occupy offices, so how tightly squeezed in we are. And then there's utilisation, which is, you know, the number of people that come into an office on a given day. The first two of those are less important than the third, but do need considering and often are forgotten in the discourse at the moment. So office jobs, although we're in a sticky patch for the economy, clearly are expected to grow, and we do expect net growth in 5 years' time. So more space demand holding all else equal. And then density, both for virus reasons, but also comfort reasons, we do expect that people will want to occupy offices less densely. So again, all else equal, that would mean more space demand. But the biggest lever to this equation is, of course, utilization. And that's where we do expect change, similar to the survey evidence, but perhaps not as extreme. But the three things together point to a scenario of a drop in floor space demand in 5 years' time of about 5%. That's that kind of midpoint of various scenarios. That doesn't sound like a huge number, but it is significant given that the pre-existing trend rate of growth would have us 5% higher in 5 years' time. So it's about a 10% swing.
Yeah, I mean, the delta of that seems quite significant. So on that basis then, where does that leave rental growth, not just in London, but in other big cities over the next 5 years, do you think?
The extra surplus space that is the consequence of less floor space in the market would result in lower rates of rental growth. So we can model that. We can model the relationship between vacancy and rental growth. However, the bigger story, I think, is one of polarization. So what we're seeing in terms of what occupiers value from offices, that's becoming more enhanced. That's, you know, productivity, collaboration, good quality space, great ventilation, good air quality, all these things that have become more important and more highlighted since the pandemic started. So while we might see a slower rate of average rental growth, the spread around that average will widen significantly. So good quality offices will prove far more resilient. Poor to average quality offices will see a much greater degree of structural risk. So although we do forecast positive rental growth over 5 years, you know, clearly we see rental decline in 2020 and 2021, but positive over 5 years, there'll be a much more significant spread around that. And that's really what investors, developers and lenders have got to get to grips with.
Well, that brings me nicely into James, because fortunately we have a lender on the line. James, from a lender's point of view then, what sort of office assets will you be looking to finance in a post-COVID world? Where are the opportunities, do you think?
Morning, Francis. Thank you. We're targeting, and we'll continue to target post the COVID pandemic, really prime offices with solid asset quality fundamentals. So in other words, offices that are in good locations, that are well let to good tenants, and require loans, typically anything between 20 million up to 200 million. We target that space on the whole. In terms of locations, we're focused to central London and the major UK regional centres, so typically Manchester, Birmingham, Leeds, Bristol, Edinburgh, Glasgow, and other major centres. And we're also focused to core Western European cities. Our preference at the moment is to the newer offices, so generally buildings that are designed to benefit the more flexible internal reconfigurations of space, particularly with the demands that we see going forward in the future, and also those assets that have potentially higher ESG credentials. So typically they may be BREEAM rated or other. And I think the last point just to mention is we will fund portfolios where we get diversity of income, diversity of tenants. We'll also fund single let buildings, but our tendency and focus on single let buildings is to have stronger tenant quality and generally longer lease lengths.
It's interesting though, if I could just backtrack a little bit, James, because Bill was talking about polarization, this sort of polarization within the market where you get the great quality, as you say, ESG credential buildings on the one hand, and the really rather tired looking sort of abandoned second tier office space. Does that not mean though that, you know, with this polarization in the market, you as a lender are going to have to pay a lot more for this really prime office space?
Well, I think for investors, yes, I think there will continue to be more competition for those prime quality buildings. And so there will be more demand and more competition for pricing, and investors will pay more in the market. I think from a lender perspective, again, similarly, we will have more competition amongst lenders and margin pricing will tighten. It has moved out over the last few months. Having said that, I would see, given the competition, particularly for really good long lease newer buildings, that the pricing will come in slightly over the next few months.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about risks now for the sector, James. Where do you see the key risks?
Yeah, I mean, there are a number of risks, but I think the biggest risk just at the moment is that unknown of knowing where office demand is going to be in the future. Clearly, the changing occupier requirements and the way that we might use offices in the future being that much different from pre-COVID and with more people working from home. Tenants are also requiring more flexible internal space and typically shorter leases, and this will impact cash flows and increase potential refinancing risk for lenders. I think the other factor is high obsolescence potential of some of the larger older buildings or more secondary office assets. Typically, they may be less efficient and require large amounts of capex towards refurbishment to secure new lettings if they become vacant. And these buildings, which are less ESG friendly going forward, could be a risk for many lenders where there are typically shorter leases and high capex requirements to that space. And I think the last area of risk that we see in the office space is potentially some of the business parks or campus style purpose built offices, particularly in the regional locations that may be a little bit weaker, where occupiers now require potentially less space. And we feel there will be a pickup again of targeting more urban serviced offices, where we think there will be a continuing push post the pandemic and once people start returning back to the cities.
So eventually we'll get back to the cities, which will be nice for many, I'm sure. Now, Bill, just stepping back and from the portfolio management side of things, looking at property overall, I mean, historically, it's been a good diversifier, hasn't it? Because of the uncorrelated returns it produces. Do you think that's still the case?
Yeah, thanks, Frances. Yes, it is still the case. I'll give a researcher answer and say that, depending on the time horizon, those correlations do wax and wane in terms of their strength or otherwise.
So, that's called hedging your bets.
Exactly. It's not always that clear cut, but generally, yes, we do see a good diversification benefit from real estate returns. One thing I'll point out at the moment is the relative value of real estate income in theory. And I emphasise that word in theory because clearly due to the pandemic, there are many occupiers who either aren't paying their rent or are under deferment. So although the situation isn't quite as bad as we feared at the start of the pandemic, rent collection is down. So there's a gap between income receivable and income that's actually received. However, when that normalizes, and we do expect it to normalize, the relative value of property income will look very strong indeed compared to other asset classes. And in fact, we've done a bit of research on that, you know, comparing property yields to gilts, equities, other fixed income products, and property's own history. And on that basis, property looks as good value as it has done since the mid-90s. So there is a compelling story, which we think will encourage capital back to the sector when things normalise, hopefully later this year.
Okay, well, fingers crossed on that one. Now, James, let's just turn finally to you. And I'm just going to pick up a quote from Lord Norman Foster, actually. He said recently that perhaps the obsolete office building becomes the residential tower of the future. Possibly controversial. What's your take on that?
Yeah, an interesting article, which I did see. I think it's fair to say, I think there will be change. The degree of that change is questionable. I think it's very much subject to regulation and changing planning policies, which remain relatively tight, and especially off the back of some of the poorer quality conversions that have taken place in the past from retail to residential. However, I think it's a fair comment to say that the pandemic could well help to reshape some perhaps more mixed or peripheral business districts within some cities. So in other words, some of the older or more secondary office buildings that are not fit for purpose could be repositioned to alternative uses such as residential, and that's the obvious alternative use for a number of these buildings. I mean, I think it's fair to say this is not a new concept. You know, over time, we've seen older Georgian buildings being converted from houses to offices, back to houses, and more recently, a number of retail conversions to residential. And there are also some already successful conversions of some of the more obsolete office towers, for example, in central London, although it has to be said that a number of these are more in the high-end residential market. So I think overall a fair comment. The scale of it I would question to some point, but I do think there will be some reshaping and reusing of obsolete tower buildings that may be offices now into residential going forward.
And I suppose on that note, you could argue it's real assets are the ultimate recyclable assets, in a way. Anyway, food for thought there. But let's hope we leave our virtual offices soon and see each other in the not too distant future. Bill, James, many thanks for your time on LGIM Talks. If you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, you can leave us a rating, or maybe even a review if you're feeling particularly generous, on the Apple Podcast app. It really helps new listeners to find us, and we're always on the lookout for new ways we can improve. As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals only and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. This podcast should not be taken as an invitation to deal in legal and general investments. Any views expressed during this recording belong to the individuals and are based on market conditions at the time of the recording, and do not reflect the views of legal and general investment management. Forward-looking statements are, by their nature, subject to significant risks and uncertainties and are based on internal forecasts and assumptions and should not be relied upon. Where individual stocks are mentioned, these do not constitute a recommendation to buy or sell any security, and are for illustrative purposes only. Legal & General Investment Management is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. To find more great content, check us out on Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website, elgim.com.